You're listening to the Mindful Psychology Podcast, a podcast designed to explore mindfulness, psychology, neuroscience, and various aspects of holistic health. My name is Jen. I'm your host. I'm also a therapist, an educator, and a yoga teacher. Join me and brilliant guests as we explore various topics and offer you actionable steps so that you can be informed and intentional about your health and well-being. Now sit back, relax, maybe take a notebook out, and let's dive in. Hi everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Mindful Psychology Podcast. My name is Jen, I am your host, and today we are joined by Anne Swanson. Anne Swanson is a yogi, a yoga therapist, a massage therapist, and the author of The Science of Yoga. I'm so excited about today's chat because Anne will take us through understanding yoga education, yoga therapy, and the different things that you can do to employ some of her tips and some of her nuggets of wisdom into your everyday life to ease discomfort and also just to thrive a little more. And she'll also talk about her book and her upcoming course and just all kinds of really awesome things. It's so lovely to speak to Anne. So without further ado, here's Anne. Hi, Anne. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Jen?
Good, thank you. So where are you joining us from?
So before the pandemic, I actually sold everything I owned to travel the world on book tour with my book, Science of Yoga. And I got to my first location, which was in South America, got to hang out in Peru for a month, and then I made it back for like an in-between stage to the US, and traveling came to a halt. So I am at my mother's house in Virginia right now, hanging out, just keeping it a low profile. And not exactly where I thought I'd be, but it's working out well, going with the flow.
Yeah, fair enough.
As we all are.
Yeah, I mean, during a book tour, that's pretty intense. What happens now? Like, it's just postponed, I guess.
Well, I've been doing some of the book tour online. I'm supposed to be in Japan right now, so I rescheduled to do some events with a translator, with a Japanese art, with a Japanese studio. So that'll be like on Zoom. And so basically doing a virtual book tour until we're allowed to travel again. And I've been working on creating my online course that goes with the book, which will be out this fall and open for enrollment. So that's been fun to do. I have a background in video, so I've been enjoying creating videos in this time.
Fun. Yeah, I mean, your reels are pretty awesome. Like, I've seen.
Oh, like, thank you.
I know that's different than, you know, like creating, you know, videos for a course or doing, you know, having a background in video. I'm sure you did, you know, actual video. But I mean, your reels are pretty good.
Thank you. Well, that's kind of funny because they're actually not reels. They are TikToks.
Oh, right.
That I'm repurposing for reels. So yes. Anybody out there, there's not a ton of yoga people on TikTok yet. I'm sure there will be soon. But if you are out there and you're into yoga and psychology and mindfulness and Tai Chi Qigong, I also talk about that on my TikTok. My handle is at Anne Swanson Wellness, which is actually my handle for Instagram also. But I've been really enjoying my time on TikTok as a previous video editor. I can like sit there and I can edit at my fingertips and be silly. It's really silly on TikTok.
It's really, no, they're always really entertaining, but they're really information, like they're really educational. That's the word I was looking for. They're great.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing with TikTok is it's going in that direction of educational. So they're investing so much money into making it an educational social media platform, which I think is going to separate it from that endless scroll on Instagram or Facebook.
Absolutely. And it's bite-sized and you don't really have to commit to it. I think people like that, right?
So, yeah, definitely.
That's great. Okay, well, speaking of which, I mean, of that part of your work, I suppose, let's dive into what you do, why you do it, how you came to do it, and all of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Anne Swanson, and I have a Master of Science in Yoga Therapy. So that means that I have a certification as a yoga therapist, and I did a 2-year degree to get that. And I, before that, was a yoga teacher. So that's the path to become a yoga therapist, is first being a yoga teacher. And I became a yoga teacher because yoga helped me so much through so many tough times, through anxiety, difficulty sleep, and chronic joint pain myself. And I wanted to share it with people. So when I became a yoga teacher, interestingly enough, I knew I wanted to work with like older adults, people in retirement communities. I've always just connected with people that are older than me. So I spent many years working in retirement communities, which exposed me as a young yoga teacher in my early 20s to many chronic diseases and conditions, especially arthritis, which most of my students had. So I became a specialist in yoga for arthritis, as well as Tai Chi and Qigong for arthritis. And really wanted to be able to address the major concerns I was seeing with my students, that when as you age, you have a more likelihood of having more chronic diseases. So sure. Whether that be heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, really common thing I see, as well as depression and anxiety, and just dealing with what comes with life as we get older. So that's been my specialty. And I became a yoga therapist because I really wanted to have those skills to bring to people, and got really interested in the science of yoga, the research to support it, and how yoga has been shown to be a really promising adjunct therapy for so many different major chronic diseases that the world is dealing with now, as well as so many mental health disorders and conditions. So yoga has a lot of promise, as well as the meditation aspect, mindfulness aspect, and Tai Chi, Qigong, something else that I practice and teach. So that's really where my interest lies, and how I got into it. Now I teach people of all ages, because I've been teaching virtual yoga therapy, mm-hmm. working with people on Zoom one-on-one actually for years, well before COVID-19 hit. So that was the format I was working in before, because I work with people, a lot of people with chronic pain. And it's a lot easier to meet virtually when you're dealing with pain or have a disability, and it's hard to get to a space and drive there. It's just easier to set up at home. So that's been working for me for years. And now people are more and more open to it since the pandemic has hit.
Yeah. Yeah. And how would you go about doing yoga therapy online? I'm just curious. I mean, I'm sure it works. How have you done that? What do you find different between in-person and online? How do you adapt to that?
Yeah, it was an adaptation at first, because I had my in-person clients, and then I moved across the country from Virginia to Colorado several years ago. And when I did, my in-person clients wanted to stay with me. So I was like, okay, let's figure it out. We'll do it on Skype. And then I discovered Zoom, and like just a little trial and error to get that format. So trial and error over the years. But then as I began to take more and more clients that I've actually never met in person, I had to figure out how to do the intake and assessment. Mm-hmm. With yoga therapy, compared to just typical yoga class or maybe a commonly done one-on-one session in yoga, there's always an assessment component. So I need to look at the person in the beginning, do an intake with them that addresses all the koshas, all the layers of being beyond just the physical, and look at their body and how they move, how they breathe, how they walk, how can they get up and down from the floor. And typically what I learned in yoga therapy school, which I went to Maryland University of Integrative Health. So in this program, my teacher, Marlisa Sullivan, taught us hands-on assessments. She's a physical therapist and yoga therapist. And so we learned hands-on assessments. And I definitely had to adapt away from hands-on. Also, as a massage therapist, I'm very used to hands-on. And I actually really loved it, because I felt like I got better with my words And I was able to more empower people to do it themselves, you know, rather than going and getting the bolsters for them and setting it all up, which is so lovely sometimes. They would grab what they had around and learn how to set it up themselves, to be empowered to know that they can do it later in the day. You know, they can grab that couch cushion and do the same pose. So there's some positives to it for sure, but I had to cut some of the assessments I do and change them in some ways, asking more questions to my clients to get more of their feedback of how it feels, since I can't physically feel. So it was a little bit of an adaptation, but I definitely have found the sweet spot where I can do a great assessment. And typically what I do is the first session is an assessment, and that's a longer format, an hour and a half. I've looked through their intake, which is very thorough, and I'm addressing their major goals, and we're coming up with goals together. We're really working together rather than me telling them what they need. Mm-hmm. And then the sessions after that are an hour. So I do typically 5 sessions for a person. And I typically meet every other week. This is what I found over the years has worked really well. There's some level of accountability in between where I send them pictures of the poses, sometimes a recording of a meditation or a specifically formulated practice, sun salutation that's right for them. And they practice in between. And then when we meet, we adapt it, you know, for them in their lives. I'm not usually giving them like an hour long practice. It's usually more like, do this 10 minutes in bed right when you wake up. Yeah. Do this 10 minutes in bed before you go to sleep, or as a break at lunch to gather your thoughts. Do this breathing practice before you press send on that email. So I'm typically giving little yoga breaks that they can fit through the day. And I found that that's been really successful. So that's how I do it. I'm trying to empower people to be able to continue on their own. It's not about having a client forever. I like to have them for that 5 sessions. And then often people will get a brush up session later. And that's the format that I have found works really well for me and my clients.
Well, that's really great. And also, you know, not everybody wants to sit down for an hour and meditate or try to meditate or practice. And I think integrating it into your life in this sort of seamless way is the best, you know, I mean, even for people who have a strong practice, if you don't have those nuggets that you learn throughout the day, even an experienced yogi can just be like, oh, I'm so busy today and not do anything throughout the day, you know? So
exactly.
Nuggets are super important. And we often overlook them, right? We're just like, oh, I didn't get to do my super long 2-hour practice today. I guess I'll just pick up again tomorrow. And we forget about all the little things we can do throughout the day. So I think it's super important. But you said so many things as you were saying that, and you talked mm-hmm. about like yoga teaching, and you talked about how your mentor or your teacher was a physical therapist and a yoga therapist. So I really want to unpack that, and talking about how you're also a massage therapist. And so let's start with the difference between a yoga instructor or yoga teacher and a yoga therapist and their roles. Can you please unpack that for us?
Yes, definitely. So to become a yoga therapist, first you need to be a yoga teacher. So to be a yoga teacher, you know, you need, typically it's 200 hours of education, but many yoga teachers have continuing education far beyond that. Now, some yoga teachers may have had continuing education for a very, very long time and may have a lot of the similar skills as a yoga therapist, but not have the degree. However, the degree or the certification ensures that somebody has this base level of training to be able to safely and effectively work with people with more complex chronic diseases and conditions. So typically a yoga therapist isn't working with like a large group. It's usually one-on-one. So you can do that assessment, or it's a small group. And if I teach, for example, a small group class for yoga for arthritis, I'm doing a mini assessment beforehand. I'm maybe even calling each of the individual participants to chat with them so that when they come to the group class, I know how I can adapt for them specifically. It's not going to be a large class with 100 people and maybe like 8 or 10 people in the class where I've had that assessment component. And a yoga therapist has the yoga teacher training plus 2-year degree after that, or certification, I should say. Mine is a degree because I have a master's of science, but not all of them are master's degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they
they're all about 2 years though. They're all pretty long and they're all very structured courses, and you need like supervised hours, don't you? Like supervised in-person hours as well.
Yes. Yeah, so that's 800 hours on top of your basic yoga teacher training. It's done over 2 years, at least, sometimes more. And you need supervised hours of actually working with clients. So the way it worked in my graduate program at Maryland University of Integrative Health was we actually had a clinic where people would come in, and we had little rooms, and they would come in and we work with them and teach them yoga and do yoga therapy with them after an intake. And we would have our mentors in the other room. If we had any questions, we could run and get them or ask them the questions. And that worked out really well because they could even come in and talk to the person and give us some advisement, as well as afterwards, we'd have reports that we were submitting to show that we were doing soap notes and able to communicate properly with possibly their medical providers. Or for, in my case, a lot of times I'm communicating with health coaches. Mm-hmm. So to communicate with referrers, to communicate possibly with their physical therapist, or their recommend them out to a therapist. I'm really with it, the yoga therapy. Often I am referring people or making sure they're getting help in other areas like nutrition or psychotherapy, or often they've done physical therapy and I'm like, are you doing your physical therapy? So I may look at what they did with their physical therapy, and I'm respecting what they're getting from all angles, because yoga has been shown to be an effective adjunct therapy. I'm not saying that yoga therapy is replacing any of those others, but instead we're working effectively alongside. And I think my yoga therapy training really taught me well how to do that, how to be an integrative health provider.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I like, so how do you, so sometimes you'll work and you'll take off from where a physical therapist left off. Other times you're referring to a psychotherapist, and not necessarily only in that direction, but how do you know when your role ends and another role begins?
It's a really good question, because sometimes it can be gray. I am not a psychotherapist and I'm not a talk therapist, but of course people are going to talk and catch me up and tell me how things are going. There's often a point where, you know, if we have an hour session, I really do want to get them breathing and moving and meditating. So if we've talked for quite a bit and it feels like there's more to unpack, I may say, have you talked to your therapist about this? Are you talking to your therapist about this? Since I work often with a health coach with them too, I may mention that to the health coach to make sure that they're continuing to get their help. So I'm not going to take the whole session of talking by any means. It is definitely a gray area where you learn that intuitiveness of when you are crossing over your scope of practice. It's very important as yoga therapists that we stay in our scope of practice and use the tools of yoga. I myself am not a psychotherapist or physical therapist. And so I constantly am reminding myself, okay, tools of yoga, tools of yoga. So I think that it's just something we have to just keep check on. And I think it's a very important thing. And it's an important thing for yoga teachers too, to understand their scope of practice and the separation. Everybody, we can all respect each other's scopes of practice.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love that. And even just thinking, if when in doubt, just think of what tools you have to offer. And if it goes beyond that, then perhaps it's time to refer the client somewhere else. And I like that. I guess I want to do the same sort of comparison quickly with physical therapy and yoga teaching. I had a teacher in my yoga teacher training who even said, oh, somebody had asked what yoga therapy is, and they said, oh, it's basically like physical therapy. So can you comment on that and tell us what you think about that?
Yeah, I actually saw somebody had said that on their website when they defined yoga therapy. It's like physical therapy and psychotherapy came together, and it is not at all. Those are two very separate things, and we cannot claim that based off of our 2 year of training in yoga therapy that we're doing those things. So I I'm a yoga therapist. I have a yoga therapist and a Tai Chi master that works with me. I have my own teachers, right, that I learn from, but I also have a therapist and I find value in that. Yeah, it's definitely not is my first part of the answer. My second part of the answer is that in the scope of practice for physical therapists, they have quite a few things that we yoga therapists do not have. So for example, they have the ability to do some manual work, electrical stimulation. They are doing other things that are in their scope of practice that we just don't have. Mm-hmm. They are working specifically with also a movement goal. And often I'm not working specifically with a movement goal, mm-hmm. or it is different. I'm usually working with the client's goals. Like, what do they want to be able to do? Which maybe I want to be able to get up and down from the floor so I can play with my grandkids, right? So it's a little different of how I approach it. As a yoga therapist, I'm using the tools of yoga and looking from a kosha perspective. So looking not just at that physical part, but also in the breath and the energy, the psycho-emotional and mental health, as well as spiritual health. Those are all things that I'm looking at. So it's not as much focused on those physical outcomes. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of differences for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you had said at one point that yoga teachers can have similar experiences based on continuing education after the yoga teacher training. But mm-hmm. it's not quite like being, or it's not, it doesn't mean that they're yoga therapists. So I guess that would be my last question about this sort of comparison, because I really do think it's important. And I'm not even a yoga therapist myself. I just think it's really important to understand these different things and just know where our role is and where what we can actually offer is. So what were some differences that you can make between yoga teaching and yoga therapy and some of the experiences that may seem similar but are still not yoga therapy?
Well, I would first say that I am an IAYT certified yoga therapist. So through the International Association of Yoga Therapists, which have a standard of education that have very specific things that I needed to learn to be a yoga therapist, very rigorous to have a teacher yoga therapy training get approved for this program. So that is an important thing that I to discuss. Thus, is that I have that certification through IAYT. Mm-hmm. You can see that they're on their website, IAYT.org, that there's several training programs throughout the world. There's lots of choices and different perspectives. So it's not like there's just one cookie cutter program. Some focus more on mental health. Some do focus more on physical assessment. It's really, there's some variation between it, but we know that everybody has a certain standard of education, as well as you mentioned, that those clinical hours supervised by a professional yoga therapist. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's the difference. It's just that you know that they have that skill set and that they're continuing education, because you do have to, just like as a massage therapist, you have to do continuing education every few years. So you also know that they're keeping it up.
Yeah. That's also comparable to the Yoga Alliance, right? Like to be part of it and to stay within, you have to complete a certain amount of even just practice or teaching. That's a similar kind of thing, but although this is also to make sure that you're meeting the requirements and meeting the training, so it's I think more robust for the
yes
therapy and for massage therapy, but it can be compared to, for example, the Yoga Alliance, making sure that teachers are staying active and still teaching kind of a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Yoga Alliance is a registry and IAYT is a certification. So that's a difference there. Sure. Is that, yeah, with Yoga Alliance, they're trusting, oh, you got your certification from that school. But with IAYT, it's a certification through them and through your school. So it is more rigorous, as you mentioned.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, that's fair. Okay, thank you for that. Okay, and so within this, this idea of, so you mentioned the doshas and you mentioned looking at more of what did you call it? You called it a psycho-emotional perspective to the way that you treat your clients. How have you found that these holistic modalities help you go deeper into being able to treat or help people?
Yeah, so I'm often not working with a diagnosis, I'm treating it, right? So I'm not like, oh, you have anxiety, let me treat the anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's more, how can we give you some tools to work with to ease those anxious feelings as you work alongside your other healthcare providers, and maybe even you're taking medication. So I'm working integrative alongside. I find that one important thing about yoga is that it is both top down and has bottom up pathways. So top down is this like neurocognitive pathway, which is something I talk about in my book. And this is like what therapy gives us. It's this, the shifts in our mind then can affect our body and the way our digestive system works and whether or not we're fertile. You know, our organ systems are affected by the mm-hmm. thoughts and the stress levels that we're dealing with, right? So therapy works in that top-down pathway. But yoga also provides meditation or this mindfulness aspect that we bring to the movements or the things that we do. So that's that top-down pathway, as well as the philosophical teachings of yoga that we apply to our lives. Mm-hmm. And then yoga, in addition to the top down, has the bottom up, or you could say the neurophysiological pathway. And so this is like me actually doing the movements, and by doing movements, asanas, I change the hormone levels in my body, in my brain. I change the connectivity of my brain, right? So it goes from bottom up, from my body to my brain. Or even pranayama can be seen as this by kind of a little bit of both, because I control my breath, but by shifting the way my lungs are functioning, the activity in my vagus nerve, by shifting my breath, I am then changing my brain waves. I'm changing the connections of my neurons in my brain. It's mm-hmm. bottom up pathway, as well as just like the body awareness that you get from yoga. And from all of these practices, really, from mindfulness, meditation, Tai Chi, Qigong, from any sort of mindful movement practice or exercise, if you're doing it with that mindfulness added to it, you get that body awareness. And if I could say, I could sum up my work into three main points, like all of my book, Science of Yoga, down to three main points, what I would say is, number one is that yoga helps you with body awareness. So try to feel your body more often, mm-hmm. not just during the class. Like that's where we're practicing, right? Yoga is a practice, but can you feel your body more often when you're doing the dishes, mm-hmm. when you're brushing your teeth? Do you feel the inner workings of your body, and can you be amazed by it? Can you feel it as vibrations rather than something to run away from or push down, right? I think so many of us that deal with pain can relate to that. So feel the inner workings of your body more often. Feel your breath more often. That's part of body awareness. Can I feel my breath and maybe even adjust my breath as needed? That is one of the biggest things you can do throughout your day, and not people don't even need to know that you are doing it. And then the third thing that I've learned, and then I feel like summarizes all of my work and my whole book, Science of Yoga, is to be curious. Mm-hmm. Be curious about everything. Ask questions. It's not about this pose has to be done in this specific way, or this meditation has to be exactly this way. Everybody's different, and it needs to be adapted for the individual. So as you learn, be curious. What feels good in your body? What feels right to you? What do you need to change? Instead of jumping to judgment, can we jump to curiosity? It applies in so many ways. So I think that I guess my summary is that yoga works in both that top down and bottom up pathways.
Yeah.
It's important to recognize that those feelings in our body and be curious about them more often.
Yeah, I love that so much. I never even looked at it like bottom up and top bottom. Sorry, I said that badly. The bottom, top, and top, bottom. I never looked at it like that, but I can see that that unique consideration of both directions, so to speak, is the perfect way to make this such a complementary therapy, right? Like it, looking at the whole thing in its own unique way, as a therapy, right? In the yogic way.
Yeah.
So beautiful because, yeah, it's so true that in therapy, although obviously there's mindfulness psychology and mindfulness-based cognitive therapy that just brings more awareness to the things that are happening in our minds and in our bodies. But still, at the end of the day, it is this cognitive type of therapy. We're starting from the awareness of, I suppose, what we're beginning a different consideration, but we are definitely trying to change our thoughts and our behaviors so that they change how we feel about things, right, at the end of the day. But what you've explained and what you've sort of described in all of this is quite a refreshing and new perspective to all of that, right? Like not looking at not one particular direction, but just as a whole, which when you unpack, it has different directions, but really is just a nice holistic way of considering our health and ourselves. And I think even what you said about, you know, what do you notice when you do the dishes or what do you notice? I think even when you're eating, right, it's so easy to eat quickly because you have to run into another meeting or run into something, but just thinking of how it feels, or am I chewing my food enough? And is it feeling weird as I go? I don't know. I try to think of those things sometimes.
Yeah. And isn't it so much more interesting when you do? So John Kabat-Zinn, the researcher and creator of mindfulness-based stress reduction, which includes some yoga components and as well as meditation, mindfulness, he talks about when you're in the shower, be in the shower. Yeah. Check. Are you actually in the shower? Are you in the shower? Ask yourself. And so I really appreciate that perspective, especially coming from a researcher in the field, bringing it into something practical.
That's so true. That's very true. And for people who don't know, who might not know the difference between mindfulness and meditation, how would you describe the difference between mindfulness and meditation?
Yeah, so mindfulness would be it can be a type of meditation, a way of meditating, and it also can be an activity and attitude that you bring into your everyday life. It doesn't have to be a seated practice of here for this 10 minutes, I'm doing this. It can just be how you move through the body throughout the day, how you are noticing how you feel and noticing your posture and being mindful of all of the components of the present moment. So John Kabat-Zinn defines mindfulness as paying attention on purpose to the present moment without judgment.
Ooh, that's
yes.
Beautiful. I'm going to put that exactly like in the show notes. So please just send it to me after.
And it's in my book. I talk about his work in my book and that exact quote.
Okay, so I'm not going to make any show notes. We're just going to have people buy your book and they're like, this is what we talked about in the show.
Absolutely.
It'll be perfect.
Yes.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's great. I love that explanation. Say it one more time for the people at the back.
Paying attention on purpose to the present moment without judgment, which I think is the caveat, the part that so many of us are working on for sure.
Absolutely. And can you give an example of what that would look like in a moment for people? For example, you can even use that thing you said at the beginning about taking a few breaths before sending that email. Could it be a part of this, or are we getting into something?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So I think that sometimes we can get in our heads and doubt ourselves, and really, like, if we can listen to our body, I believe the body has the answers. Mm-hmm. This is actually what I said earlier, what I work with my clients. I don't tell them what their goals are. They tell me what they're feeling in their body. They tell me what their goals are. That intuition is there. So I think taking that extra moment before the email is a way to check in with what does your body tell you. Mm-hmm. And no, don't judge it. It's telling you the truth. Is it telling you, ooh, I feel an icky feeling, I'm going to regret this in a moment? Then take a moment, walk away, come back, refine that email, right? Another good example of this is with chronic pain, which is what I specialize in when I work with my private clients. A lot of them are dealing with pain. And a lot of times we can label that pain. especially if it's a type of condition that flares up and down. We're like, oh no, it's coming again. Now I'm not going to be able to do the things I love. I'm going to have a horrible few days. This pain, it feels, you would just call it pain, right? We're like, oh, this hurts. It's just pain. But when you really dive into it, it's like vibrations, sensations. Can you take a moment and not judge it and just feel it instead of pushing it down? There may be some wisdom in it, something that you can do about it. You know, whether it be, my body's telling me I need to take a bath. My body's telling me I need to sleep and rest. Can I listen to that? So to take away that judgment, instead focus on the listening aspect of it, the being the observer.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so true. And I also think that the body does tell us all kinds of things. I'm a believer in the fact that once it happens physically, it's been happening probably psychologically for a while. Even sometimes when you have menstrual issues, or I know that when I'm irregular, I can definitely see why I'm getting irregular or why I'm delayed, for example. I think that, and normally I'll get all frustrated, like, oh no, why am I stressed again? But then I try to see like, okay, well, maybe it's because you're looking at life like, oh no, why am I stressed again?
Yeah, true. Yeah, as Bessel van der Kolk said, the body keeps the score. And I think it's important to note that more and more the psychotherapy field is doing more movement and more bottom-up pathways, because they're seeing that it's more effective when you combine both. And that's something that yoga has to offer.
Yes. I mean, I don't know if you've had students cry in your class when you're doing or some kind of hip opener. It happens. There's something, you know, we store so much stress and I don't know. Do you want to talk to us more about that? Like, have you noticed some patterns or some tensions being held in a lot of your clients and often in the same places or anything like that?
Oh, girl, I've cried during Shavasana, right?
Oh, boy.
We are all human and we are all processing and on our spiritual journey. I think that's something I really hold dear, that you can look at this from the scientific perspective and still be spiritual and open to spirituality at the same time. So for me, it's a spiritual experience to go into a pose and to feel the shifts that are going on, to be that observer. Aristotle said that a change in the shape of the body causes a change in the state of the soul.
Yeah.
So it's something that people have intuited and observed for a very long time, and ancient yogis and ancient qigong masters really devoted their lives to this and found so much wisdom that now research is showing is a lot of it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, for example, a practical tool is simply elongating your exhales, right? This is something that yogis do, changing the length of your breath, elongating your breath, and especially elongating that exhale, making it perhaps double the inhale. Well, what we've found is that when you elongate your exhale, on the exhales, there's a slight more, every single exhale, slight more parasympathetic nervous system response. That's the relaxation response. Every single exhale. And every single inhale, there's a slight peak in sympathetic nervous system response. That's that stress response. So we're always fluctuating between the two subtly. Yogis just intuited this. They didn't know that with each exhale, the vagus nerve is activated, which tells the heart to slow slightly and to go into parasympathetic response. They did not know any of that, but they felt, when I make my exhales longer, I really feel like I'm changing my brain, the state of my body. And we now know that they're changing their brain waves. You're changing your hormone levels when you do this. You're changing your overall state. So simply elongating your exhale, whether it be a 3-count inhale and a 6-count exhale, whatever you can tolerate. I like to try to go toward 4-8, but that's not always possible. If you're a singer or a musician, you may be able to go even longer. So whatever you can tolerate, trying to get it to be about double the exhale. This will put you more in that relaxation response. You don't want it to be forced or anything. Whatever is comfortable, it's still going to work for you, even if it's a 2-4. That's something that can really help.
Yeah, that's also an interesting point to make. Like, it shouldn't stress you, but if breath work is making you out of breath, then you have to shift a little bit what we're doing. Like, you know, I always forget the name of this one where we're playing with the nostrils and stuff.
Alternate nostril breathing?
Oh, well, yeah, that one. I thought it was...
Yes.
I was thinking of
the Nadi alternate Shodana, nostril breathing. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. That. But that one, especially if you're congested and it's not helping you breathe, then that can be... I mean, I find sometimes it helps my congestion problem, but if I'm having a particularly difficult day that day, I'm not going to continue and force it. So that's an interesting point, as well as just to start slow, even if it's 2-4, and then maybe 10 minutes later, you might be at a 4-8 or something like that, you know?
Or just this time of the day, honestly, when I'm lying in bed and I'm feeling anxious and I start to do a breathing practice to try to calm my mind, to unwind and go to sleep. Sometimes that 4-8 is too long for me and I have to do a 3-6 or a 3-5 or whatever I can tolerate, and that's fine. So it depends on the time of day as well for you, or your state, what you're going to be able to accomplish. So definitely keep that in mind and be gentle with yourself, but trying to have it to be about double the inhale at whatever you can comfortably tolerate is really great. And it's like, as you mentioned, okay, so we're trying to breathe through the nose, whether it be doing alternate nostril breathing or just in India, they say the nose is for breathing, the mouth is for eating, right? In yoga, we try to breathe through the nose. But if you... like so many Westerners have a deviated septum, or you're dealing with allergies, you may have to, when you're sick, when you're dealing with allergies, breathe through the mouth. Now, I would say do whatever you can to try to breathe through the nose, right? Like whatever you possibly can, do a neti pot, blow your nose, wear a breathing strip at night, whatever you can, because it's very important for your health. But you're still staying alive if you breathe through your mouth a few breaths or in your yoga class. So yeah, definitely working your way up to these things and knowing that you can, it doesn't have to be perfect. It's about progress, not perfection.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And I guess my last question, or my last big question, would just be, so I love how, you know, you talk about science of yoga, and obviously we've talked about yoga. We talk a lot about science. I have a whole book about it. And I love to hear how people have found this combination between science and either mindfulness or yoga or something more, less sciencey, quote unquote, like really just saying it like that. How have you found that balance? How do you maintain it? What are your thoughts on that balance or that marriage between, we'll call it science and art, let's say?
Well, I would say, first of all, that lack of evidence is not evidence of lack. So just because we don't have research to support a specific yoga claim doesn't mean that it doesn't still have benefits. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that the research and the science is the be all end all. However, what I am saying is that the research, first of all, is very, very interesting, and it is affirming much of what the yogis have said. I love reading about how it changes our brain structure, our hormone levels, reduces inflammatory markers in our blood. It changes the stress hormones running through our blood. Also, we can see that through testing, right? I love reading about all of this. But it's also something that, you experience. So you experience it in your body. Get my book, Science of Yoga, and it'll be motivation to practice, because you'll see all of these benefits.
Well, this episode was a motivation to buy the book. So I definitely,
yeah, well, good.
It would be so fascinating. Yeah.
In the book, you'll get ways to improve your interoception by looking at the poses and my suggestions of what muscles are most likely to be activated or lengthening. And you can go into the pose and feel it in your body. And that's going to help you with that bottom-up pathway, right? That's going to help you with your body awareness, to feel the inside of your body more often at a deeper level. So my book is this guide to help you actually practice, experience it. It's not just about reading it, you have to actually do it. So that's what I really love seeing, is like pictures of people on Instagram saying that they're doing the poses right next to my book. They're planning their classes with my book, because it's this inner guide. And it is just a guide, because your body is different than this computer generated man in the pose, right? Like, your body is going to be different. You may feel it slightly different. You may need to adjust and adapt slightly different, but use this as a guide for your own inner exploration. So that's really what my book, Science of Yoga, is about. It's about sparking curiosity, leaving with more questions, which hopefully I can answer in my upcoming course, Science of Yoga.
Yes, you can actually talk about that next.
Actually get my book, learn about the course. You can get an updated reference guide. So in the back of my book, I have all the like references, all the research articles that I refer to, including a lot of systematic reviews and meta-analyses on yoga and its effectiveness. So it's in teeny tiny print in the back of my book, where you can look at it, or on my website, scienceof.yoga. So www.scienceof.yoga. You can get that reference guide, and I have a summary of each of these major articles. Very simple to understand, and then you can click and go right to the article and read it. Because don't believe me, be curious and ask more questions, as well as you can get on the interest list for my course, Science of Yoga. The way I'm doing it is each month is a different system of the body, because it's not just about the muscles and bones. You know, I talk about how yoga can change your digestive system, reduce symptoms of IBS. There's research on this. Yoga can improve your immunity, reduce the inflammatory markers in your blood. So I'll be talking about that, as well as practical tips. So you can learn all about that on my website, www.scienceof.yoga. And also my book's in 15 languages. So I link all of those.
I saw that. That's amazing. That's great. And I know it came out in Slovakian, which normally I wouldn't notice, but my fiance is Slovakian. Oh, cool. And I was like, hey, look, this book is available in Slovakian.
And what I love most about the book in other languages is you can get two different languages and the pages line up. So you could be like on page 95, if you're like learning a language. I'm doing this right now. I literally have my book in Spanish, and obviously I know the English. So I'm reading the Spanish, and I can look back at the English and be like, oh wait, what is that technical term? And it's a really great language learning tool too, if you're a real yoga nerd.
Oh my God, that's amazing. That's great. So what are the 15 languages? Do you know them all offhand? Sorry, I'm just curious.
I don't know them offhand, but I can, with a click of a button, find them. So for sure, we have German, French, Japanese, Chinese, both traditional and the simplified Chinese. We have Spanish, Italian, Swedish, Slavic, Hungarian just came out, Czech, Russian, Vietnamese, Korean, Danish, Finnish. And I'm just hoping for a few others. There's a few that I feel like are missing that I'm just crossing my fingers for Portuguese sometime soon. But when I go back on my book tour, one of my goals is to go to every country where my book is released and teach from it. So keep your eyes open if you're in a country and you'd like me to come, and or if you'd like me to come and teach when this pandemic is over, definitely reach out to me on my website.
Oh my goodness. Well, first of all, congratulations on that. That's incredible. I didn't mean to put you on the spot with all those countries. And that's incredible.
Oh no, it's fun. It's cool to look at the covers. They're all different.
Oh my goodness. If you can get them in Croatian, because I'm trying to learn Croatian right now, get the book in Croatian.
I'll work on that.
Please. I mean, you can come here and teach anytime, with or without, you know, your book being translated. But I mean, that's incredible. That's so great. Congratulations on that. And then your course, you said, comes out in the fall?
Yeah, and then it will continue on. It will have some pre-recorded options or parts of it, and where you dive into that system of the body, as well as a call with me. I'm really loving at this time, as people are more open to meeting on Zoom. I just had an event with 50 people, and I run a monthly meditation, which you can find on my website, anneswansonwellness.com. That's free, and I'm getting people from all over the world. It's so cool to have somebody in India and in the UK and in Spain and all over the US all at once. So it's been really a positive part of the pandemic, although there's been a lot of challenges.
Obviously.
But it's really great to connect with people all over the world.
And I think at this point we know that it's bad, and I don't think that ever goes undiscussed and forgotten. I think that we know, and it's good to look at the positive things, right? It's good to look at what's happened and what's come of this, like the good things that have come of this. So that's great. And then I guess the last thing I just want to ask is, if anybody is thinking of becoming a yoga therapist, what would your advice be? Because I know people don't talk about yoga therapy so much or enough, I find, as a science and as a practice and a discipline in its own right. So what would your advice be to somebody who's thinking about becoming a yoga therapist and isn't really sure if it's the path for them, but they love yoga and they want to go further and they want to do more? What would your advice be?
I actually have an article that I would like to link and give you, as well as a YouTube video. If you even search on YouTube, what is yoga therapy? My video will be one of the first to show up. So I'll give you that article to link in the show notes, but if you're just listening to this, you can search on YouTube. Feel free, watch that video, see the resources below it. Feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions. Go to IYT.org to look at the different programs, as well as another website is yogatherapy.health. To read really great articles, beautifully curated articles. So I would definitely do that. And then feel free to reach out to me once you've looked at all those resources. I love to chat with people. I offer mentorship, but I also just, will email you if you have a quick question, or reach out on Instagram. I love to chat with people that are interested in yoga therapy and help you find the right program.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. And I think it's important to know that it is a discipline in its own right. It does require training. I quite like that you've emphasized that. And not to say that there's anything wrong with continuing education as a yoga instructor, but it is different. And I think that's really important. And I never wanted to dive too deep into it because I'm not a yoga therapist myself, but definitely really interested in the field. So I thought it would be great to just answer some of those questions and maybe clarify some misconceptions.
And yes, thanks for asking.
On the field. So, all right. Well, thank you so much for answering all those questions, and thank you so much for your time today. I'm just so excited about this episode.
So I hope that you enjoyed that episode with Anne. I know I certainly love chatting to her. I've put all the links to everything that she mentioned in the show notes, as well as how to get in touch with Anne, buy her book, get signed up for her course, and all of that fun stuff. As always, if you love the show, please give it a 5-star review. You can also leave a nice little comment if you fancy. It really goes a long way in supporting the show. So thank you so, so much. That's it for me today, guys. Until next week, namaste.